2. Almost 24 hours later, evening was falling over Atlantis like a freshly laundered bedsheet, descending over a bare mattress just before getting its hospital corners tucked in. The citizens walked home after their day's activities. Merchants either packed up their goods or shouted to anyone who would listen that they were selling them at a loss to keep from having to carry them away. The light from the sunset reflected off the silver sequins of Martin's robe and wizard hat, and the silver bust of Santo on the head of his staff, projecting a million pinpricks of light that danced and bobbed on the walls, the ground, and Gwen, who walked beside him. Her robe and hat were made of a subdued tan material, but caught the eye just as much as Martin's, as they were expertly tailored and draped to Gwen's petite frame.
"Why are we walking again?"
Martin asked.
Gwen said, "You know why. We discussed it, and agreed that it was a terrible idea to ever teleport to Gary's."
"We agreed it's a terrible idea to teleport to Gary's if he knows we're coming," Martin corrected her. "We might as well ask him to set up a nasty surprise for us. And I know that we're flying from Britt and Phillips to Gary's place. I just don't understand why you wanted to walk from your place to Britt's."
"Oh, that. For fun."
"Fun? We can fly and teleport, and walking across town is your idea of fun?"
Gwen laughed and took Martin's arm.
"Look around you. What's the point of living somewhere beautiful if you always teleport past it, or fly through too quickly to enjoy it?"
Martin looked at his surroundings and admitted she had a point. One of the advantages to the fact that Atlantis was built inside an immense bowl floating rim-deep in the Mediterranean was that when one looked out across the bowl, almost the entire city was visible from any one spot. The narrow streets formed concentric rings, growing both larger and higher as they radiated outward, built on the roofs of the buildings along the streets below, like terraces cut into a hillside. This encouraged the sorceresses in charge to make sure that any proposed new building, garden, or pathway met certain aesthetic standards. Martin saw a vista of minimalist glass buildings, beautifully manicured green spaces, and palm trees rustling gently in the Mediterranean breeze, all tinted pink by the distant sunset.
"Okay, I see your point. But why don't you ever want to walk anywhere when we're at my place?"
"Because your place is in medieval London. The streets are paved with mud and people poop out their windows."
"The second of those statements sort of contradicts the first. I guess that means you'll want to live in Atlantis then."
"I live in Atlantis now."
"I mean, later. When we live together."
"We've talked about this, Martin. I'm not interested in living together out of wedlock."
"I know that, Gwen. That's not what I'm saying."
Gwen stopped walking and stared at him.
"Martin Banks, are you asking me to marry you?"
"Oh, Lord, no."
Gwen said nothing.
Martin said, "Let me rephrase that."
Gwen's eyes narrowed.
"Please do."
"What I mean is, I wouldn't propose like this, just casually dropping it in conversation. I'd make a much bigger deal out of it."
"Good."
"Yeah. And I don't know that we're ready for that quite yet. But I do think I'd like to be married to you eventually."
Again, Gwen said,
"Good."
Martin took a step closer to Gwen and lowered his voice a bit.
"What do you think?"
"I think it's good to know where you stand."
"And where do you stand, Gwen? Do you think you'd like to be married to me eventually?"
Gwen resumed walking at a brisk pace.
"I'd rather not discuss it."
"Just tell me how you feel. Your gut instinct."
"My gut instinct is that that would be discussing it, which I've already told you I'd rather not do."
"You don't want to marry me."
"I didn't say that. Maybe I think I might want to marry you, but I worry I could change my mind later, and I don't want to commit myself right now."
"Is that any better?"
"I'm not saying it is. I'm not even saying that's how I feel. I'm just saying that it's a different reason."
Martin chewed on this for a moment, following Gwen as she double-timed it through Atlantis. Britt the Younger's apartment was in sight now, and it seemed Gwen couldn't get there soon enough. Finally, he said,
"So, either you think you might want to marry me, but you fear that you'll change your mind, or you don't want to marry me, but you want to keep the option open in case you decide you can't do better. I'm going to be bummed either way, aren't I?"
Gwen remained silent.
"Which, I'm sure, is why you didn't want to discuss it."
Gwen stopped at the door to Britt the Younger's apartment and rang the bell. She glanced over at Martin.
A smart woman keeps her options open.
Martin said,
All I've done is told you how I feel. My options are just as open as yours, and I'm just as likely to change my mind as you are.
Britt the Younger opened the door. She pushed her glasses higher up on her nose and smiled.
Gwen, Martin, I'm so glad you stopped by.
Martin and Gwen stopped looking at each other and instead focused on Britt, attempting unsuccessfully to hide the emotions their conversation had just dredged up. Britt said,
I think I'm glad you stopped by. Come in.
Britt the Younger's front door entered directly into the main room of her apartment, a spacious, high-ceilinged space, one whole wall of which was a curved window that looked out into the dark blue depths beneath the surface of the ocean. Along the back wall there was a table and chairs, as well as a large kitchen where her domestic servant and close friend Nick was puttering away on some unidentifiable project. The other wall featured two incongruously rustic wooden doors. Gwen entered first and made a beeline for the long, low couch. She sat at one end and pressed herself into the armrest, giving the impression that no matter where on the couch Martin chose to sit, she wanted to be as far from him as possible. Martin didn't make any effort to sit down, either on the couch or any of the other chairs. Instead, he walked steadily toward the two wooden doors set into the wall.
Thanks for having us, he muttered as he walked past Britt. Where's Philip?
Britt said,
In his rec room. Would you like anything? I could have Nick, Martin mumbled. No, I'm good, and went through the door on the left.
He emerged from the door, thousands of miles and thousands of years away. Physically, the door should have led into Britt's bedroom closet, but both of the wooden doors were enchanted, programmed to act as portals from Britt's home in the Bronze Age Mediterranean to Philip's two properties in Ledchurch, a town in medieval England. The door Martin chose led to the attic above Philip's office and workspace. Philip had filled this attic with all of his favorite things from his original time. Being a product of the mid-1980s, that meant a lot of white leather and neon lights. At the far end of the room, Philip's pristine white Pontiac Fiero occupied a place of honor. Through speakers the size of large tombstones, Sting advised that if Martin loved somebody, he should set them free. Martin walked to the bar, where an iPod he'd given Philip as a gift was wired into Philip's high-end 1985 rack-mounted stereo system through an old-school cassette adapter. One of the advantages of having a friend who was from a time 30 years prior to his own was that Martin could give him wildly outdated technology, then laugh inwardly when it blew Philip's mind. Without asking permission, Martin pressed the cassette player's stop button, ending the song with a resounding ka-chunk. Philip stood with his back to the room wearing no shoes, his sky-blue robe hanging open like a dressing gown, and his wizard hat crammed half into one of the pockets. He hunched over his vintage arcade game, a full-sized cabinet labeled Gorf. His staff leaned against the wall next to the cabinet. Martin stood beside Philip, his body canted at a slight angle, looking down at the screen as he had since his early adolescence whenever a friend was playing an arcade video game. A ship maneuvered around the bottom of the screen, shooting up through a curved shield at an orderly formation of spacecraft, which drizzled down return fire. Martin shook his head.
Isn't this just a rip-off of Space Invaders?
Philip said,
No. The beauty of Gorf is that it isn't just one game. It's made up of several different games. It's a rip-off of Space Invaders, followed by a rip-off of Galaxian, followed by a rip-off of Tempest, topped off with a second slightly different Space Invaders rip-off.
Ah, I see. I didn't know that. I've never made it past the first level.
Too difficult? Philip asked.
Too boring.
They heard a rapid knocking at the door, forceful enough that it was not so much a request for permission to enter as a warning that entry was imminent. The door back to Britt's apartment creaked open and Nick leaned in.
Can I offer you a cold drink? Maybe a quick bite to eat?
Martin shook his head.
Nothing for me, thanks.
Philip kept his eyes glued to the game and his hands on the controls, but said,
Yes, it's kind of you to offer, but we'll all be leaving pretty soon, I should think.
I suspected as much, but if you change your minds, the offer stands.
You take awfully good care of us, Nick,
Philip said, most of his brain still preoccupied with shooting fictional invaders from what might be called space.
That's my job.
You do it well. If there's anything I can ever do to make your job easier for you, I hope you'll tell me.
Nick said,
Thank you, Philip, I will,
and withdrew back into Britt's apartment and closed the door behind him. Philip said,
That man is a treasure. I'd be lost without him.
Martin smiled. Not lost, just hungry and living in squalor. Philip's eyes darted up to Martin for a second, then back to the game.
I don't think that's quite accurate.
I knew you before Nick came into the picture. It's accurate. Philip continued slamming the joystick back and forth and pounding on the fire button.
You're in a mood. What's wrong?
Martin groaned.
You and Gwen are fighting.
Again.
And you said something stupid.
I sort of accidentally proposed. Philip laughed.
That's a yes. I take it her response was less than enthusiastic.
She didn't answer.
She said nothing?
No, she said that she wasn't going to answer.
Ouch.
Philip let go of the joystick, allowing his final spacecraft to be destroyed. Martin watched the animation and heard the burst of static from the speaker that signified the spacecraft exploding and its entire crew perishing in the vacuum of space. Philip stroked his short brown beard as he turned to face Martin.
Look at it this way. You and Gwen are meant to be,
Martin smiled.
Or,
Philip continued,
you're not. If you're not, there's nothing you can do to change that.
Martin scowled at Philip.
That doesn't make me feel any better.
It wasn't meant to. You're fighting with the woman you love. You're going to feel awful. For me to try to change that would be counterproductive.
Philip, have I ever told you what a good friend you are?
No, I don't believe you have.
Martin said, Yep, that's not by accident. We can't all be as happy as you with your drama-free relationship. You're lucky.
I am very happy and lucky, but Britt and I both put a lot of work into avoiding drama. She's the most important person in my life. Keeping her happy is well worth all the effort I put in, and more. If I keep her happy, she'll stick around, and that will keep me happy.
That's fine for you, but what if you were in a relationship with someone who wasn't putting in the effort?
Martin, you're my best friend and one of my favorite people. But if you think being in a relationship with you hasn't required effort on Gwen's part, you haven't been paying attention.
Martin opened his mouth to respond, but stopped when both men heard a distant knocking from downstairs.
You expecting anyone? Martin asked.
No. I'd better see who it is.
Philip started down the stairs, then stopped, bent down, and picked up a pair of canvas high tops decorated with Union Jacks before continuing on his way, sliding a bit in his socks. Martin followed close behind. Philip would have been more inclined to just let an unexpected visitor knock or shout at them to come back during business hours, but the last time someone came calling unexpectedly at his office door, it had been to announce that the town was under attack by dragons. He was disinclined to ignore the knocking now. Martin followed as he walked down the stairs and through the seance room, where a small table and a crystal ball disguised Philip's Commodore 64 computer. They passed through a beaded curtain into the front room, where walls full of small dusty shelves held countless small dusty bottles containing old dusty specimens or powders, which, in many cases, was just old dust. Philip opened the front door, but nobody was waiting outside. He and Martin looked out on one of Ledchurch's many dirt roads, lined with buildings made of grayish-beige stones, wooden beams, off-white plaster, and thatched roofs. It had often occurred to Martin that here in medieval England, before the invention of advanced paints and dyes, everything was essentially dirt-colored. This was lucky, as it helped hide the dirt with which everything was covered, because advanced detergents hadn't been invented either. Philip shrugged and started to close the door, but Martin stopped him, leaning outside. He looked to the right and saw nothing of interest, just Ledchurch at dusk. He looked to the left and saw a group of kids, one of whom was carrying away a rectangular package about the size of a hardbound book, carefully wrapped in shiny red paper. The kids were giggling quietly as if trying to contain their amusement. One of them looked back furtively at Philip's door, and when he saw Martin, quickly looked away, shushing his giggling friends.
Hey! Martin shouted. Did you see anybody knock on this door?
The boy carrying the package said,
No, sir.
Then he and his friends darted around a corner and out of sight.
Those kids just totally ripped you off, Martin said.
You think?
Philip leaned against his counter and pulled one of the canvas Union Jack high tops onto his foot.
More likely they just knocked on my door as they walked by as a laugh.
I'd bet anything that whatever was in that package was for you.
Oh, well, whatever it was, I'm sure they needed more.
What if it was something nasty, some kind of practical joke or something?
Then it would serve them right for stealing. Even if it was for me, I'm not going to go chasing them down for it, whatever it was. Bad for the image.
Martin cast one last rueful look in the direction the boys had fled and started to pull the door closed. His gaze swept across the street and caught a glimpse of a shadowy figure across the way, lurking in the gap between a timber and plaster building and a thatched hut. The lurker was adult-sized and seemed to be built like a fairly husky male, but it was hard to tell anything beyond that as he wore a rough brown full-length cloak with a large hood pulled over his head. He seemed to be looking in the same direction Martin had been, the direction the roving gang of untrustworthy youths had gone. The hood's subtle movement gave Martin the impression that the person inside was shaking his head. The hood twisted around, and while Martin couldn't see the person's eyes or any of their face, the way it stopped moving abruptly while pointed directly at Philip's door left Martin with a distinct impression that the robe's owner had noticed Martin noticing them.
"Hey!"
Martin shouted.
"What's your deal?"
The figure jolted, having either been startled or suffering a full-body spasm, then darted around behind the building out of Martin's sight. Philip finished tying his shoes and stood, testing his weight on each foot to judge if he had tied them tightly enough.
"Martin, you're far too young to enter the yelling at young punks phase of your adulthood."
"What? No, I'm not yelling at the punks. They're long gone. No, there was someone else."
"Where?"
Martin pointed to a gap between two buildings across the street.
"He took off too, whoever he was."
Philip looked where the person had been, as if the size of the empty space they'd left would help Philip identify him.
"What did he look like?"
"I don't know," Martin said. "He was wearing a big heavy cloak with a hood. All I saw inside the hood was darkness."
"So, a Jawa. You saw a Jawa."
"No, it wasn't a Jawa."
"Are you sure? Were they trying to sell any used droids? Always check the motivator."
"It wasn't a Jawa. Jawas don't exist, and if they did, they wouldn't be in medieval England." "Wrong... I don't know, what do you call it? The wrong surroundings. The wrong context."
"Milieu,"
Philip said. Martin scowled.
"Yeah, that. The wrong... that. Besides, Jawas were little and had glowing eyes. This guy was guy-sized, and I didn't see any glowing eyes."
"Then maybe it was Orko. He'd be a better fit for a medieval setting. You know Orko from He-Man?"
"Yes, I am familiar with Orko," Martin said, more than a little indignant. "And again, Orko was small and had glowing eyes, and he flew. He didn't even wear a hood. Orko had a pointy hat."
"Oh, yeah."
Philip pulled his wizard hat from his pocket and placed it on his head.
"He was a silly-looking little git."
Both Martin and Philip heard the beaded curtain behind them rustle. They turned to see Britt the Younger and Gwen standing behind them. Britt the Younger handed Philip his wizard staff, a long, knurled branch of wood with a small glass vial full of red liquid fastened to its head.
"What's going on?"
"Nothing,"
Martin replied. Philip said,
"Martin thinks he saw Jawa."
Britt and Gwen both asked, "Where?"
Martin said, "It wasn't a Jawa. Just someone dressed like one, and it doesn't matter. Whoever it was, they're gone now. We should go."
Philip pointed across the street.
"Over there, between those two buildings."
Britt and Gwen stepped outside and looked across the street. Britt said,
"I don't see anybody."
"Me neither,"
Gwen agreed.
"Of course not," Martin said, following the ladies outside. "Like I said, they're gone now."
Gwen squinted at him.
"Then why did you want us to look for them?"
"I didn't!"
Britt rolled her eyes.
"Then why did you bring it up?"
Martin could see what was going on. Gwen was irritated with him, and Britt was Gwen's best friend, so now they were a unified front against him. Martin turned and looked at Philip. Philip looked at Martin, his best friend, then at Britt the Younger, the woman in his life, then at Gwen, the best friend of the woman in his life. Philip did some quick mental calculations, then stepped slightly closer to Britt and Gwen and frowned at Martin. Martin sighed.
Can we just go?
Gwen said, After you. Martin pointed his staff upward and lifted into the air, followed by Philip, Britt the Younger, and finally Gwen.